This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As a business owner or IT manager, are your cloud investment costs going up and you don't know why? It's time for Cloud Optimizer. As you migrate your business to the cloud, what you're spending and why you're spending it can get a little hazy. But Cloud Optimizer clears up the mystery and puts the cloud to work for you. Cloud Optimizer starts by analyzing usage patterns, right-sizing resources, leveraging discounts you may not be aware of, implementing automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service. As you utilize cloud-based services more and more, you don't have to lose sight or control of your spend. You can stay agile, streamline your costs, and optimize your performance, plus save significant money with Cloud Optimizer.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
I want to thank you for listening and for all your support as we at Death, Sex, and Money have made our move to Slate. Your stories, voice memos, and emails have meant so much to the team. As part of this transition, there's a new way to support our show financially at Slate, our new home, and you'll get something special in return. Subscribe to Slate Plus, and you'll not only support our work on Death, Sex, and Money, you'll get access to new benefits, including listening to us and all of the other great shows Slate makes, like Slow Burn and Decoder Ring, without any ads or sponsor breaks. To subscribe, just click Try Free at the top of the Death, Sex, and Money show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/DSM+ to get access wherever you listen. Thanks.
The fact of my life is, wherever you are at the moment, it took every bit, every second, every split second of your life to get there. It's gone. You did it. It's over.
This is Death, Sex, and Money.
Listen, little girl, respect is for the dead. The living need dough.
The show from WNYC about the things we think about a lot.
I think he's going through male menopause.
And need to talk about more.
We don't often talk about death, sex, and money.
I'm Anna Sale.
My name is Norman Lear. I was born on the 27th of July, 1922. Which makes me 93 if I'm counting correctly.
Norman Lear is the TV writer and producer behind iconic sitcoms like The Jeffersons, All in the Family, Good Times, and Maude.
Carol, you want to move? Then move.
You mean that?
No.
His shows took real life and put it on the small screen.
All right, we both own a house, we both own a furniture, we both own a window, half and half. I want my half closed.
And they became some of the most watched TV programs of the 70s and 80s.
Hold it, Diane. We are the Jeffersons.
Norman spends most of his time in Southern California, but I talked with him a few weeks ago in the luxury building in Manhattan where he has an apartment. It's been called New York's most exclusive address.
I wanted to be able to say to my kids, not you will not want for anything at all, far from that, but you will not be desperate for a dollar. And that meant different things along the way. You know, probably when I was a kid, it meant if you had $200,000, you were not going to be desperate. And along with the times, the number increased. It's now 60 billion. That's a joke. Yeah.
Norman's worth an estimated $700 million now, according to Inside Philanthropy. But growing up, he didn't have much. His father was arrested when Norman was a kid for selling fake bonds.
When my father was hauled off, I was 9 years old, to prison, served 3 years. And my mother was selling all the furniture because she felt we couldn't live any longer in that much shame, and she needed the money and God knows what. So the evening he was taken away, she had people over and they were buying furniture. And she was selling my dad's red leather chair. And that hurt more than anything. And in the middle of all of that, some horse's ass of a neighbor or a relative or something, an adult, put his hand on my shoulder and said, "You're the man of the house now." And I don't know whether in that instant or the next morning or, but reflecting on it, certainly, I thought, my God, how funny, strange that is, you know. And then he said, the man of the house doesn't cry.
Did your dad ever tell you why he went to prison? Did he speak to you directly about it?
Well, I read the paper. I knew why he went to prison. And my mother had said to him, I don't like those men, Herman. Don't go with those men. She tried to warn him. Nobody ever told Herman anything. I've been everywhere where the grass goes green, and I know everything, he used to say. I adored my father. I continue to love him, despite all the difficulty, because he leaned into life. He ate it up, you know. And whatever was going wrong, he was, you know, going to turn it around in the next 20 minutes. In 2 days to 2 weeks, he was going to have $1 million, always.
And when you think about how your father was trying to raise you as a young man, what did he teach you about what it was to be a man?
Well, now we're getting into the sex part, because the one thing I can remember, a couple of things, advice that he gave me. Norman, he said, never take a wet deck. He had been in the Navy. Now, a wet deck, in his terminology, meant, you know, three guys are going to have sex with the same woman. You be first.
So pretty vulgar advice.
Yeah, pretty. And then at one point, I was driving a Good Humor truck, came home at 11:30 at night. He leaned out of the bedroom window and threw me the keys to the car and said, why don't you and Sid, that was a friend of mine, why don't you and Sid go up to Troy and get laid? He thought it was time that I thought about that. So, you know, I don't like saying what I heard myself say because out of affection for him. Poor bastard. I mean, this is what he knew.
Did you go to Troy?
We went to Troy. Yeah, we spent an hour driving around Troy. Got there about 4 o'clock or something in the morning, looking for red lights, because it was supposed to be notorious for a red light district. No such thing, at least not for us.
Norman's father died in 1957, but he kept showing up in Norman's work for decades after. When Archie yelled at Edith to stifle during an argument on All in the Family.
Oh, stifle yourself, will you?
Oh, that's a terrible thing to say.
That's what Herman Lear used to yell at Norman's mother.
I used to sit at the kitchen table, and I would score their arguments.
Norman's father also showed up in the psychiatrist's office with Bea Arthur on Maude.
The man never gave me one decent moment, not one. Maybe one.
That was a real experience in my life. I rewrote it. When it came to a grandstand play, he was good at it. I was dating my first wife, the woman who became my first wife. I was going to pick her up in West Hartford. In my car, which was a Model T or something, it was an ancient car we paid $35 for or something. And my father was driving a Hudson Terraplane, new car at the time. And he was going to come home. He said, you take my car. So he was due home at, say, 3 and then 4. And finally I left and drove through Meriden and Waterbury and all that distance away from Hartford, there's suddenly a honk, honk, honk behind me. And my father has caught up with me in the Terraplane. And we exchanged cars. And I take my girl to the theater properly. And that was a giant. That was, you know, it overwhelmed me. So I wanted to do that with Maude. She came into a psychiatrist's office.
Anyway, the thing is, I can't believe I'm here. I mean, Me, Maud Findlay, actually talking to a psychiatrist.
And then she remembered something about her father.
And then he broke every traffic law in the books so that he could get there in time to give me this coat with the Persian lamb collar so that I could wear it to the prom.
It was the same kind of grandstand gesture. And Maud, crying on the couch, said, "What am I talking about? I loved my father.
Oh, how could I have forgotten a thing like that?"
She had previously said, "I guess, doctor, this will be the last time I see you." And anyway, after realizing that she loved him after all, she got up and walked to the door and turned around. And the way she said,
"See you Friday."
Oh, my God. How I treasure that.
Coming up, what Norman learned from the generation after him, his children. Is there a blind spot that you've had that your children have revealed to you?
I'm sure. I will reflexively leap to a liberal position before I have thought it through.
We noticed last week that it was exactly a year ago that our episode with actress Ellen Burstyn came out. It's one of my favorites. So this week, I called her for an update.
People have talked to me on the street. I actually had somebody say, "I've been practicing Shouldless Days." And I said, "Oh, that's great. I'm so glad I was a good influence."
That's awesome to hear, especially on the streets of New York City, you know?
Yeah.
So how have you been in the last year?
Oh, God, it's just been the busiest year of my life. I did not expect age 82 to be the busiest year of my life. I just got home from, actually, Shreveport. And while I was in Shreveport, I was shooting a wonderful independent film called The Tale, T-A-L-E, with Laura Dern. The week before, I was in Baltimore shooting another episode of The House of Cards. Oh. I think I've done five for this new season. I can't remember if it's four or five. I think it's five. I also did an appearance on Alice and Janney's new show called Mom, which I just love. She has a half-hour comedy that's wonderful. And that'll air November 5th, I understand, which unfortunately I'm not going to see because I'll be on a plane to Oslo. I got asked if I would accept a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Stockholm Film Festival. And seeing as how the first thing on my bucket list, number one, was to see the fjords of Norway. So that's close enough to Stockholm to say yes.
So you're going to see the fjords and get a Lifetime Achievement Award in one trip.
Yeah.
That's really living up the bucket list, I got to say.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, if you want to go to the places that are on your bucket list, you have to call in some really strange shots.
When was your last Shouldless Day?
Actually, it was Saturday because I got home because of storms and connections. I got at the airport in Shreveport at 6:15 in the morning on Friday, and I got home at 11 o'clock at night. So Saturday became my Shouldless Day. I don't even think I took my dog for a walk. I had a dog walker for that day.
That's an incredible indulgence. Still have the dog walker come.
Yeah. Oh, and I also did two other films. One called Wiener Dog. Written and directed by Todd Solondz, who's a wonderful filmmaker. And another one called Custody. Those will all be out next year, so I hope I'll be able to just sit back and let them play without me, not have to do too much.
Thank you, Ms. Burstyn, for your time again. It's such a privilege to get to talk to you.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling me.
Oh, Ellen. You can find our episode with her at our website, deathsexmoney.org. On the next episode,
Hi, Anna and the Death, Sex, and Money team. This is Caroline in St. Paul, and I'm responding to your inquiry about the people who aren't having sex, and I'm one of them.
Your story's about why you're not having sex.
This dry spell started out as a choice. I had a messy breakup, but that was almost 5 years ago, and while I'm fine with it, I would also like for a change to happen.
This episode is brought to you by Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high-profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he will chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We have had a lot of exciting new things to share with you about the show recently, but this might be some of our biggest news yet. Death, Sex, and Money is officially going to be live in New York City at the Tribeca Festival on June 11th. And I want to personally invite you to the live taping we'll be doing with the legendary journalist Kara Swisher. If you know Kara's work, you know her ability to get people to tell her things is unmatched. And she does it in her signature, hard-charging way. She's not afraid of things getting a little combustible. I have a slightly different interview style, so we're going to talk about that and play around with that in experimental ways that I think will make this a special show unlike any of our other live shows up to this point. And it's not often that I get to do a live Death, Sex, and Money show in New York, so I really hope to see you there. Whether you're in the city, on the East Coast, or just been looking for a reason to visit New York City, come on June 11th for this show. You can get tickets now at tribecafilm.com/deathsexmoney. We are so excited to see you there.
I'm Shankar Vedantam, here to tell you about a great mystery. That mystery is you. As the host of a podcast called Hidden Brain, I explore big questions about what it means to be human. Questions like, where do our emotions come from? Why do so many of us feel overwhelmed by modern life? How can we better understand the people around us? Discover your hidden brain. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC. I'm Anna Sale. A decade before Norman Lear started working in television, he began another career as a soldier. When Norman was a sophomore at Emerson College, Japan attacked Pearl Harbor. You enlisted when you were a college student?
I did.
Which is not something you hear of happening in 2015, to leave college.
Certainly we don't see people like me and you enlisting.
Yeah.
And probably 90% of your listeners are not enlisting, kids who are hungry for something that makes for a career, or to learn something or to have the comfort of a dollar, are enlisting.
And you served in Europe during World War II?
Yeah.
Do you think back on your time in Europe often, or does that feel like a long time ago?
My wife and I, Lynn and I, were in Berlin 3 weeks ago. Flying into Berlin was an experience I don't have the words for because I had been in a plane bombing it twice. I have no way of expressing what I felt except remembering how I didn't care when I saw the bombs drop and then gather with the bombs from other planes. And I'm looking at 100, if not thousands, of bombs falling and thinking they might, not might, probably are going to fall on farms or co-ops or where innocent people are going to get killed. And I didn't care. And then thinking about that hours later or days later, I don't know when, often wondering if anybody gave me a piece of paper and said, sign this, that you're somebody who would never give a shit how many people were killed innocently down there. I have to believe I would never sign it. But I do remember feeling it. The feeling was, screw him.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, to make it a little clearer, if somebody harmed one of my children, I know I could drive 4 hours and kill the son of a bitch in front of his family. Now, that's a feeling I just shared with you that's total. But I want to believe I could never do it. But I'm expressing something that's there.
Norman has 6 children from all 3 of his marriages.
There was one daughter at the end of my first marriage, and 3 at the end of my second marriage, and 3 more children in my third marriage. I have 5 daughters and 1 son. The daughters range from, I love saying this, from 20 to 69. And
wow. I mean, when you say that, that's incredible.
I know, it's quite a quite a spread.
Do you think you were a different sort of father to your children since you had them at such different points in your life?
Looking back, I wasn't an ever-present. I was much more an ever-present father to my television shows. I've learned not to regret. If I had it to do over again, I think I would lean the other way.
Norman met the mother of his 3 youngest children, Lynn, in 1984. At the time, Norman and his second wife, Frances, were separated.
I was determined not to divorce, and so I caused Frances to divorce me.
They were spending the weekdays apart and trying to make it work on the weekends.
That's how I met Lynn. One of those weekends when we were trying to work it out, we had a dinner party, and one of the guests called and said he had a blind date. Could he bring her? So I met Lynn at my front door.
Why, after getting divorced once and feeling like it was a good decision, why did you not want to get divorced again?
I don't know, something to do with my children. I don't know. Can't explain everything. My own behavior all the time. But what I've told myself is, foolishly, the grown children. I wouldn't do that to them.
And Lynn, I want to know more about Lynn. She is a student of psychology. She's 25 years younger than you. You were famous when she met you.
I was well known.
Yeah.
And she is 25 years younger, which never seemed to matter at all.
What struck you about her?
She was deeply spiritual. Deeply spiritual. And I was not, my family was not religious as Jews. I was bar mitzvahed, but that was kind of, you know, more tradition than religion. And we hit it off on these weekends of spiritual conversation. You know, we never stopped talking about what's it all about, Alfie. And it's still the best conversation going, and nobody knows, in my opinion.
Did you want to become a father again when you married Lynn? Did you want to have more children?
Well, we had talked about that, and I knew that, You know, I had agreed I would become a father because she just had to have a child. What I didn't expect was that she would want more children. But by the time she wanted another child, I was thinking, and my son, which is a big surprise to me, by then, you know, when he was a couple of years old, I thought his life would be happier if he grew up with another kid in the house. And then we had twins.
You were having your first child with Lynn when your older children were of childbearing age.
Yeah.
And what was that like?
Very difficult. My middle daughter was, had for 4 or 5 years been hoping, wishing, trying to be pregnant. And her dad is suddenly married to a younger woman, and in a year's time or less, she's pregnant. And that happened before my daughter got pregnant. So that was not an easy time. But I can tell you today, we have Thanksgiving and Christmas coming, and we'll all be together as a result of everybody wishing to be together.
What's that process been like of trying to make sure that your kids, who some of whom have different moms, that they have a relationship together and that they're close? Like, how has that unfolded over the years?
I don't know. Good love. They've spent time together and fallen in love with each other. And that part hasn't been tough. It grew naturally.
How are you talking to your family about death and your death?
That's a conversation that hasn't started. I haven't talked to them about that. I can see that, the way they express themselves and the way they reach to help me physically and so forth. I can see that it's on my kids' mind. I haven't brought myself to talk about that. I think... I don't feel near that, you know. I'm not someone who's afraid of it. I think it's interesting that that we approach it, at least this is my point of view, not knowing. You know, my wife, Lynn, will tell you something greater, better is next. She is thoroughly convinced that we go on from here. I am thoroughly convinced that that's possible, but I don't know. I'm content that, you know, we're going to get a lot of answers to the deepest questions at death, or not, or not.
That's Norman Lear. His memoir, Even This I Get to Experience, is now available in paperback. Death, Sex, and Money is a listener-supported production of WNYC. The team includes Katie Bishop, Emily Botine, James Ramsey, Destry Sibley, and Andrew Dunn. The Reverend John Delore and Steve Lewis wrote our theme music. I'm on Twitter at Anna Sale. The show is at Death Sex Money. And I want to ask you to please leave us a review on iTunes because it helps other people find the show. Norman Lear thanks a lot of people at the end of his book, including his barber, Little Joe. He's been cutting Norman's hair for 50 years.
Little Joe Chernoweva, yeah, he used to come up at Thanksgiving when we were all together, and spent Thanksgiving morning cutting hair. We'd all sit around watching him cut this individual, then that individual. We had a ball. There isn't anybody in my family that doesn't know Little Joe.
I'm Anna Sale, and this is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of 4 episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.